Good morning, and welcome to Galesburg Live. I'm Chris Poston. Every Saturday, WGIL sets a couple hours to talk with interesting people in our area from local businesses and organizations who are doing some pretty amazing things. And this weekend, we're kind of going green, but maybe not in the way that going green means today. But in our first hour, he's a familiar voice you'll hear every Wednesday morning on WGIL talking about those futures markets, grain marketing. And he represents another business that's trying to help local folks keep more of their hard-earned money. Please welcome from North & Company in Galva, Mr. Jim Anderson. Jim, thank you so much for being with us this morning on Galesburg Live.
Hey, glad to be here.
Well, it's interesting. Typically, we don't have you in the studio.
That's right. It's usually remote from Galva, Illinois.
And it's kind of a busy time for you when you do your report on a Wednesday morning around that time, right? It gets kind of crazy for you.
It can be. You know, the market's usually open in about 15 minutes. So depending on the day, yeah, sometimes I got to shut the phones off behind me and put them on hold so it doesn't ring in on us.
Yeah. So talk to us a little bit about just what North & Company is and what it does. It's you and your brother-in-law.
That's correct.
David. Tell us about what you guys do.
Well, basically, as the title says, risk management. I mean, our whole goal in what we do is to combine the crop insurance policy with the futures and options market as a hedging tool to protect the risk of farming. I mean, we go through it every year. Yield, weather, prices, all of that boils down to, at the end of each season, hey, there's, you know, so many dollars to be captured, and have we done it well? And probably the biggest thing we try to do is take the emotion out of the spring and summer weather markets and make sure we're doing the right things to protect equity.
Mm-hmm. So when you say emotion, what are you talking about when you're taking the emotion out? What do you mean?
Well, let's face it. Depending on who you talk to, it's hot and dry. I'm not going to have a crop. It's too cold. It's too wet.
Yeah.
You know, what's China going to do? All those things come into speculative markets, and they create a push and pull. Speculative funds trade a lot of dollars, and you know, when they get on a roll going one way, it makes a huge move.
Yeah.
And as producers, we have to know when prices are quality, need to be protected, and also we got to know, hey, they're getting too cheap. We don't want to panic here.
Mm-hmm.
And also knowing how the parameters of those crop insurance policies really work.
Mm-hmm. So you're marketing their grain and futures with are you in direct contact with the Chicago Board of Trade? Is that how that works? I mean, you've got that right up on your computer screen, and guys are calling you up and saying, hey, sell, buy, you know.
That's correct. In today's electronic trading,
yeah.
You know, there's not as much action on the floor because we do a lot of our own trading right there on our computer. You know, I can buy and sell futures. I can trade simple options automatically through electronics. Now, the pit comes into play when you get into more intricate option spreads. They're not as easily done electronically. So you still have a need for the pit trade, but it's not what it was 20 years ago where you'd see all the paper flying around and the chatter, and that has gone away. It's pretty much, we do a lot of it ourselves. You know, we've got stacks of order tickets that, you know, we know guys are trying to do certain things at a price. And when they get close, you know, the phone rings and we say, hey, we're getting close. And especially prior to a crop report, hey, crop report's in a couple days. Is it worth that last penny or two? Or do we need to go ahead and execute some hedges and put the next step in the plan in place so we accomplish the goal?
Yeah. Do you actually sell crop insurance?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes, we write crop insurance.
Yes.
Yep. We write through a couple of companies, Great American and Diversified right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we promote and have the revenue products. I mean, we like what they do because they lock in revenue.
Mm.
And based on yields and prices, you kind of know how the policy is going to work for you if you get into certain situations. And there's a lot of different add-on policies going on. As let's face it, as margins in agriculture slim up just a bit, companies look for different ways to try to entice you to buy a little more insurance.
Yeah.
And are those quality products, or are you better off with your basic revenue policy and a solid marketing plan year in and year out getting the job done? Because the job is about revenue. We need to try to protect revenue above and beyond expense. We make farming more difficult because of the weather, we always have the uncertainty about production, mm-hmm. but it's still a simple business. I've invested this many dollars an acre. I need to generate this many to be profitable. Well, looking at different yields and prices, how can we accomplish that? And we try to lay that on paper and take that emotion out of wild summer markets and keep some discipline in the plan so we don't let a good opportunity get away because we're scared.
Let's go back a few years. Where'd you grow up? Where
I grew up right in Galva, Illinois.
Oh, you did?
So
okay.
I am basically back home.
Yeah.
I spent a few years with Crop Production Service right here in Galesburg.
Yeah.
And then as David was able to buy the commodity business from Mike Klukas, you know, we came up with the idea of trying to combine it with crop insurance and formulate the risk management business that we have today.
So you've been a farmer all your life. Is that right?
Yep. Grew up on farm south of Galva. My dad raised cattle, hogs, and grain. Good old days of diversity.
Yeah.
And David grew up on a farm as well, south of Champaign. So we both have ag backgrounds, and agriculture has been part of our lives.
That's right.
And we just found a niche in what we do that was, at the time we started, unique, and more people are getting involved with crop insurance and marketing.
Absolutely. And you said you you started with crop production services. Now it's Nutrien, right?
Nutrien Ag Solutions.
Yep. And you were so you're selling chemicals and whatever crop.
Yep. Fertilizer, production. Anhydrous. Yeah. I spent many days of my life waiting on trains with anhydrous wagons south of town here.
You did. And so what's David's about? He said he grew up on a farm. Has he always been in kind of this business?
He actually worked in the same business I did. He met my sister through a fertilizer plant he worked for, and she was the chemical rep calling on that fertilizer plant back in the late 80s, early 90s. I forget now.
Yeah.
But no, that's how they met and ended up moving back closer to home, and we've ended up getting a great thing going with what we do.
Yeah, well, how was that conversation? Did you say, when did you know you wanted to get into this? I mean, is that your, do you went to college for that? What did you do?
Well, basically, I've got an ag business degree, and David went to the U of I as well with a similar ag background. And we basically, as he mentioned that he was buying Mike Klukas out, I was in the mode of making a change in my life at that time.
Sure.
And, you know, with being single, why not take a risk at that point? Because he was going to need help trying to be a farmer and run the business.
Yeah.
I said, think of me. And that's what started it.
Yeah. And it was an already existing insurance business? Is that
No. Mike Klukas was strictly commodities.
Oh, okay.
Strictly commodities.
Got it.
And David helped Mike, like when Mike wanted to travel, somebody had to run the office because the market
David
trades.
Did.
So he helped Mike for several years. And
is that the still location you guys have? Because you're on the kind of the east, northeast side of town.
Yep. No, we started basically in the north, the northwest corner of downtown. Mike had a building.
Okay, sure.
We started there and then looked to when the rail set up, they had those lots for sale and we chose to build out there.
Yeah.
And really for exposure, it's been perfect because every truck that hauls grain to that ethanol plant has to manage the risk of that grain.
That's right. Well, I remember back when you first built that, you built that building, didn't you, out there in the, It was kind of lonely out there. It's a big long drive, and there's that your little office out there. But boy, things really changed when that ethanol plant opened up.
It did.
It's like a city, another city out there now.
If I was doing it over every Friday as they built that, I should have taken a photo.
Oh, sure, to see it
and framed it throughout the course of I don't know if it was a year and a half it took to get it going. And it changed a whole bunch in a 2-year span.
My gosh. So being in Little Galva, you are still able, because of the technology, you really are in touch with the entire world. You've got everything there the way because of the technology changes. You're able to, you're trading all over.
That's right. Yeah. We've got clients as far as Northwest Iowa and Emmitsburg that, you don't have to be in the same room to do the business.
Yeah.
It's, just basically everybody knowing what they're trying to accomplish. And I always say I might not be in the office, but as long as that cell phone's on my hip, the office is with me.
Yeah, absolutely. How's things going in Galva? It seems to be, there's lots of changes there. It's growing.
You know, it is. You know, and I know a lot of small towns seem to are withering up a little bit, but you know, we are blessed with people in Galbot that want to keep things going. One of the things they've done these last couple years is they have this music festival thing that they do every Sunday night in the park.
Backroads
is the big deal, but they have they're doing it again this year. You know, they got a grant and they have these performers come in Wiley Park. People set up their chairs and. So there are a lot of good things that go on in Galva and keep people coming to your community. So you got to give the people within the city structure credit.
Yeah.
They're doing things to keep the small town alive because it's tough because jobs in small towns aren't. Let's face it. We've got the co-op, the ethanol plant. Yeah. David and I do a two-man business. Dixieline's still in town, but. But really, the industry is not what it was. You know, the foundry is not there anymore. The better built plant's not there anymore. So it's tough in a small town to keep it thriving because a lot of your people go elsewhere to do their jobs.
We're going green, talking about agriculture, and more specifically, trading commodities. But if you are a farmer, a producer, if you trade them well, you know, you can really minimize the risk in your operation. And to be able to trade them well, the best thing you can do is talk to an expert. And we have a very recognizable voice right here in the studio with us. You'll hear him every Wednesday morning talking with Tom Meredith about local grain markets. It's our friend from North & Company in Galva, Mr. Jim Anderson. Jim, thank you so much for being with us this morning on Galesburg Live.
Yeah, it's wonderful to be here.
We're used to hearing you on Wednesday mornings with Tom, and you're on the phone usually from your office in Galva, and you kind of get us up to date because we have a lot of farmers that listen to WGIL for their ag news with RFD, and you're kind of the local connection for local markets, right?
Yep.
And what farmers should be maybe what they're talking about right now.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
And so that's what I kind of wanted to get in this second half hour is talk about. Well, let's talk about what happened in 2018. And then maybe we can look ahead to 2019. What 2018 was not a typical year in farming, but yet there were a lot of things that have been happening for the last few years that happened again this year.
For us locally, it's another pretty much record crop.
You know,
we're now on three or four in a row of, you know, we just continue to go, well, we can't do that again.
Yeah.
And here we come with yields that are better than the past year or as good, and so we've been very blessed locally with very large crops.
And somebody tell me they had to build another mailbox for all the checks coming in.
Yeah.
That's how good it is. That's what one of my farmer friends was telling me that. Boy, let's go and say, how's it going, man? He goes, oh, I had to build a new mailbox for all the checks coming in.
Well, and thankfully in the bean market, the government did come through with a little help.
Yeah. So when you said record crop, that was corn, right? Or both?
Both.
Okay.
My numbers have both crops being better than last year. As guys that are turning in their production, our overall average, I believe I was running a 242 average in corn, 238 last year, mid-60s beans, low 60s last year. So now not everybody had that happen, but in general, when you add the averages up, it was a better crop than last year overall.
Now, you and I have talked in our conversations over the months. 242 bushels an acre of corn.
That's correct.
That's what would the farmers of, you know, the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s be thinking about us? 242 bushels of corn. Unheard of back then, right?
I can honestly tell you, we had an older neighbor just passed away at 98 years old.
Yeah.
And I know he was amazed, honestly, at what what we could grow. B, what the price of the seed corn cost compared to when he was a young man in the late 30s, early 40s, starting out as a farmer. So that man got to see a huge change in agriculture in almost 100 years.
Absolutely. What would they? What would be the average back then when he was a young man?
Oh, 30s, 40s. I think 80 bushel corn, you know, at one point was a big deal. Then we crossed over to the 100 bushel, and then you crossed to 150. And we every time we cross that next bridge, you think, wow. 300's coming.
Yeah.
Just get ready for it. Eventually, it's coming.
And it's not unusual for people to be getting 300 bushel, right? I mean, is that still pretty rare? Or
I haven't had any field averages come to that. But as you ride in the combines with the yield monitors, you're hitting pockets that get up into that 310, 320 range. And as we move through time, I guess that's probably one of the biggest challenges is can you really eliminate the variables within a field, you know, mm-hmm. little wet spot here, you know, a little clay dirt there
yeah.
creates variability.
Yeah.
And over the course of time, we've done a pretty good job of doing things about that with drainage and tile, and it's incredible yeah. really to think about it.
And soybeans, 60 bushel, really great. Record crops back then, back in the day, you know, what is it, 10, 20 bushels an mm-hmm. acre, 30?
I mean, I can remember when I was a kid, you budgeted 40, you know, and
wow.
now,
yeah.
and then we crossed to 50.
Yeah.
So, yes, technology is coming along, yeah. and we are expanding our production capabilities. That also creates a short-term challenge of demand is X, and as we produce these large crops, we are in our big supply markets as we've been in before, creating a little bit of a depressed cash grain market.
And we're talking with Jim Anderson. He's from North & Company about, well, grain markets. And looking ahead, because we had record crops last year, this year, what are they? Are they predicting more corn, fewer beans? What I've seen kind of that. I mean, what?
At this point, most of the guys are looking for an increase in corn and a little bit of a decrease in beans.
Okay.
And now that we've set the insurance price, you did get that $4 number locked in, where prior 2 years has been $3.96.
Yeah. What do you mean by the insurance price? What does the insurance price mean?
Basically, every February, we set the insurance floor for our revenue policies. The average price for the whole month was $4 these corn futures.
Okay.
Well, this year, beans are about $9.54. The past 2 years, you've been 10-16, 10-18.
Oh. Yeah.
So what has happened last year, for the first time since 1983, the U.S. farmer planted more soybean acres than corn.
Oh.
Well, yeah. Corn prices have come down due to record production.
Yeah.
Beans stayed up, and we basically shifted acres away from corn to beans the last couple of years. Mm. Well, now we've piled on this record bean crop with a little bit of a demand issue from our friends in China at the moment. Well, beans have dropped to levels that we hadn't seen for several years. And that's why right now we're sitting on a big supply of beans that we really don't have a home for yet.
Yeah. Yeah. The chair, you mentioned China. I'm talking with Jim Anderson from North & Company about grain markets and corn and beans. China, the demand was there. They're buying a lot. And how those tariffs that went into place last year effect?
Well, when they became official, I think everyone can look at a soybean chart from Memorial Day weekend through the rest of the summer. It was a pretty dynamic slide.
Yeah.
And we have seen that before. Once the market has a comfort level that supply is going to exceed demand by a great enough amount,
yeah,
you see that downdraft in prices. And we probably magnified it due to the tariffs because, you know, we're sitting on 900 million extra bushels. I mean, that's double the carryout we've ever seen in a long time. And when you look at the percent of usage numbers, you got to go back into the 80s to get 23-24% of usage type carryouts.
Oh, wow.
So we've got a little bit of a glut here, but economics will fix things.
Yeah.
Low prices cure low prices. And we'll see if March 29th shows enough of a shift away from soybeans to maybe put an end to the ugliness of the bean market. But we'll
see.
Right. I wouldn't bet on it.
How does Argentina, South America, how does that all play into this?
Well, as time goes on, we have more competition worldwide
yes.
for the grain market.
Yeah.
I mean, 25, 30 years ago, we were the grain market.
Yeah.
We were the biggest supplier of corn and beans to the world. And now, you know, South America has kind of overtaken us in beans, and they're becoming more competitive with us in corn all the time. So it is a world market, and that's why I say we have to control our emotions. When the weather's not perfect in our backyard, it doesn't necessarily mean the market's going to reward us in a great way.
Yeah.
Because right now we are sitting on a pretty lofty world supply of beans and wheat, and really the corn numbers are pretty comfortable.
Yeah.
So we don't have a shortage at this point.
Right. So when the tariffs came in, went into place with China, they went to South America, right? They said, well, if you're going to do that, we're going to our other customers down here, our other vendors,
yep,
right?
Yep. They're going to buy grain.
Yeah,
it's
they said,
from who?
Yeah,
it's
from
just,
who? Sure.
It's just like in this country. You know, we've got demand sources, all
yeah.
right? Who wants the grain worse, the Galva ethanol plant or the Anawan? or maybe the Illinois River. So we also have to realize China has the ability to use the futures market as well.
Yeah.
And I've told a few guys, I really think they've probably bought bean futures during our low period last fall.
Yeah.
And at some point when they buy the cash, they're going to exit those futures. So is a deal with China going to create a huge rocket ship up in the markets, or does it just shift from futures to cash? Basis improvement, but maybe the futures market is a little tempered.
Wow.
Because we've already got maybe some premium in, if my theory is at all correct.
So China's the biggest customer, right? Is that biggest potential
customer?
They
are one of the largest buyers of grain in the world because they have the largest population of people to feed.
Well, from what I was reading, I read this recently, half of the soybean crop and 20% or more of our corn actually leaves the United States.
That's correct.
That's incredible.
That's correct.
That is amazing. I mean, it's good news, right, for
a farm? Yeah, so we need exports. I mean, we have to have a good export program, or are we going to go back to the days of the 80s of 10 and 15% set aside? Because part of 83 being a year where we didn't plant as many acres of corn as beans was the pick and roll program. Government paid you not to grow corn that year.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, we had a lot of that go on. The government programs were huge in the 80s to keep us from overproducing crop at that time because we were growing more than we needed. And right now, you don't have quite the aggressive set-aside programs. And are we going to go back to that? Or honestly, usually what fixes a bear market is a shortfall. You come up a little short on production with a solid demand base, bear markets can turn pretty bullish pretty quick. And that's the difficulty of managing summertime emotions when markets get more rangy. Is at the end of the day, all it takes is that one key rain, and that's it. The bull market's over. And if it doesn't happen, here we go. And we go through it every year. As we move into July, hang on to your hat, because here it goes.
Now, Jim, we've talked about the fact that it was a record crop in 2018, which was a replay of 2017, which was a replay of 2016. I know you can't tell the future, but when does our luck run out here?
Well, in my cycle of memory, I mean, we basically, we hit $5 corn in the summer of 1996.
Yeah.
It was 12 years later when we surpassed it.
Oh.
Because we spent a lot of the latter 90s, early 2000s, large crops, demand base was X.
Yeah.
And you played the LDP game.
Yeah.
You had to manage some pops in the market and look to collect as much LDP as you could. Well, here we sit. You know, we've been on 4 or 5 years of pretty big crops, and when will the shortfall come?
Yeah.
You can't predict it, but you have to prepare for it.
And that's what you're trying to help farmers here in the area. Some people are still doing it on their own, or they won't get into the trading and futures because maybe they're just they don't want to take the chance, they don't want to risk.
It takes capital. What we do, it takes money to trade the market, and I have said it jokingly, but there's a lot of seriousness to it. Okay, I've seen guys let a bin full of corn erode in value, but they never missed the money they lost because they never had it.
Oh.
Now, you put a position on with me, and it goes against you a dime, and I call for more money, all of a sudden there's an awareness, an awareness of, hey, wait a minute, am I doing the right thing here?
Yeah.
And it's really the same, but because of the dollars that we incur, there's fear to it.
Yeah.
And good hedging, it all works out in the end if it's a good solid hedge. But if you are a futures trader, it takes margin and you have to be able to come up with it. So it's capital. And everybody's got a different capital structure depending on their debt load.
Do you think it's the younger producers that are taking this a lot or getting into this a lot easier than as opposed to the older farmers out there?
Yeah, my age and younger, yeah. And some of the older guys are more attuned to it. But no, it's, I mean, honestly, and I guess since I'm in the business, I'm more attracted to those guys my age and a little younger because we have a little bit of the same mindset.
Yeah, but, you guys, I see what you're saying. Maybe more used to technology in that way. And
a lot of it, too, is the guys who were farming prior to these crop insurance programs.
Yeah.
They remember the years where, hey, I hedged the board and it went against me and I didn't have the bushels and I had to buy that back and I took a real big equity hit.
Yeah.
The crop insurance has changed the risk of the positions.
Yeah.
as long as you stay within the parameters of the policy, mm-hmm. there is a fail-safe to it. And that makes what we do a little bit easier because I know that the back door is covered. If we have a shortfall and corn went to $7, your crop insurance is good till $8 with the full harvest option.
Sure, sure.
So we know there's a safety net there.
Yeah.
We didn't have that 40 years ago for a lot of the older producers. And if you get bit by that once, it tends to wean you wanting to do it again.
Right. Do you see, and we're talking with Jim Anderson from North & Company here in our final few minutes of Galesburg Live in this hour. Do you see more farmers getting out of farming these days? I mean, lots of consolidation,
yep.
farmers selling their assets, retiring, or unfortunately, there's the other side of that, filing bankruptcy yep. and yep. that kind of stuff.
I'm due to, unfortunately, record high prices can be a good thing and a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the $8 corn of 2012 generated higher land values, higher rents, higher yeah. expense.
Yeah.
And if that wasn't taken on with a defensive marketing plan to go out and forward sell prices that were higher,
yeah.
here we are lower. And unfortunately, that creates the tough times we go through in agriculture.
Yeah.
So, yes, some of the getting out of the business is being forced due to finances, and you hate to see that.
Yeah.
And that's where we try to work with guys. You know, you got to be thinking long term.
Yes.
And one of the things, I guess, some of these one-year rent deals, they are what they are, but that's tough to manage because you don't know each year, well, will I farm that farm?
Yeah.
So I really can't go out and put a three-year marketing plan together because I may not farm that piece.
That's right, right.
The only guys secure are those that own it and are debt-free.
And that's what we were going to talk about, too. You bring this up a lot, I'm sure. That's a huge factor.
You bet.
On whether you can do this, trade these futures, yep. if you have the stomach for it, is whether you own your land and are right. debt.
Those that were blessed with grandfather who bought ground for potentially a couple $100 an acre, yeah. and it's now worth $10,000, well, that puts you in a whole different risk position than someone who is renting 95% of their land.
Wow.
You know, and paying, yeah. you know, higher cash rents. You don't have the margin for error. It is much easier if it's debt free and owned.
Yeah.
350 to 375 corn is not a bad price with the bushels we grow.
Sure.
But you add $300 rent to it, the game changes.
Yeah.
And you know, it's out there, economies of scale.
Yeah.
Businesses work on higher volume and lower margin, and that's part of it, trying to manage your equipment lineup and what you can handle to generate revenue to be profitable.
Sure, sure.
And everybody's got a different story.
Absolutely. And for those who own property, who own land and are renting, what's a good average, you know, rent per acre around here? I mean,
I always ask, how much does your farm grow?
Because
if your farm grows 280 bushels an acre of corn, you probably deserve a higher rent than the timber ground north of Oak Run that maybe grows 180 bushels of corn.
Yeah, right.
So every farm is not equal. So just throwing a number out isn't fair.
Yeah.
Productivity is what should determine the rent, and you're seeing more guys try to go to a flexible lease.
Oh, boy.
When we have a good year and good prices, landlord can take more rent and the farmer can afford to give it.
Yeah.
But some of these big money upfront deals, it's all on the farmer's back to hedge that risk. And if, boy, yield comes up a little short and the market goes lower, sometimes there's not a lot to protect there. I mean, it's tough if you fall into that gap of, I didn't quite have a bad enough crop to trigger the policy, but it's not what I've grown these last 4 years.
My gosh.
And you can't recoup that equity. You just can't. It's just dollars not there. And we've been lucky. We haven't had that.
Yeah.
Our folks in Iowa, three of the last five have been in that not so good range.
Mm-hmm.
Makes it a whole different story. A
whole different game, doesn't it?
Yep.
Jim Anderson is from North & Company. We hear him on Wednesday mornings talking about the local grain markets, and we appreciate you coming in today in Galesburg Live. What's the next few years for North & Company look like? Going to keep just doing what you're doing?
At this point, yeah.
Yeah,
we're going to keep trying to keep the emotion out of it and have a disciplined business plan. And always remember, no commodity trades one way forever. Bull markets will be bearish. Bear markets will get bullish.
Yeah.
Get yourself comfortable with technicals, moving averages, and some of that stuff, because that's where a lot of the market is at.
Yeah.
Long term, it's always supply demand when the year ends. But But sometimes there are times when a market has went one way so far that it just doesn't make sense to chase that rally or that break. And the key to farming is making sure you've priced grain. If you know you need a lot of money in March, don't be afraid 6 months and 12 months in advance to lock those prices in.
Oh, right, right. Do you think we're due for a bad year?
You always are. I mean, boy, you roll the dice and roll a dice 20 times, and how many times do you roll a six?
Right.
Well, eventually that one's got to come, doesn't it? But we can't go into this thinking this has to be the year. I mean, we have to – the odds of a drought are the same every year. So we have to be careful assuming that this one's going to be the short one and we're going sharply higher. And there's a lot of guys with that attitude, and I hope they're right in a way.
Right.
But I'm going to temper my attitude and take care of business.
And you're there to talk to those farmers. So if you've got any questions, just call Jim and David at North & Company, and they'll set you in the right direction.
We'll do our best.
Jim, thank you so much for joining us today. And thanks again for joining us every Wednesday and keeping us on the keeping us informed on what's going on in those grain markets.
My pleasure.
All right. Have a great weekend.
All right.